In all this
talk of impure perception and experiential perception, there's something quite important to know, especially based in the Sakyapa view. When we say perception, you see, everything is your perception, and all these perceptions are divided into three: impure, experiential, and pure. We are not indicating that these are our perceptions, but there is something else truly existing as a perceiver or something beyond this perception. We are not saying that. That's all there is: impure perception, experiential perception, and pure perception. What we see is all our perceptions, and these perceptions change all the time, and they do not exist as a truly, independently, unchangingly. They don't. We have explained this again and again, like a friend. You look at your friend, and when you are looking at your friend, you are perceiving a phenomena that which you refer as my best friend, for now anyway. With a little bit of wrong information or something happens between you two, overnight changes. Tomorrow you look at this same phenomena, then you are looking at someone who cannot be trusted, someone who has betrayed you, ugly, irritating. Yeah, neither that good guy and this bad guy, neither that good guy yesterday's good guy and today's bad guy, they do not exist as externally, independently, truly out there. That's the fundamental Sakyapa view. Has to, you know, you have registered that. So, you know, we talked yesterday, what is life? Life is just a continuum perception. And if we have an impure perception, we will suffer. Therefore, we should change this impure perception. With what? With the love and compassion meditation and the bodhicitta meditation. Through that, we will alter this impure perception. That's how you should understand. Okay? Now for the ultimate bodhicitta. Now, ultimate bodhicitta is, you know, we were talking yesterday, in Buddhism, wisdom should be emphasized. Wisdom is above everything. This is very much what we are saying when we are talking about ultimate bodhicitta. There's a relative bodhicitta, which is the wish to enlighten all the sentient beings, not just giving them some food or drinks, not just save them from temporary suffering, but really take them to the enlightenment. But the ultimate bodhicitta is absolutely necessary. If without the ultimate bodhicitta, then relative bodhicitta would not work. Just now, as I walked in, someone asked me a related question, which is good, so I can explain to you now. See, a bodhisattva, when he or she is helping sentient beings, this bodhisattva helps with the understanding of relative and ultimate bodhicitta, both. When we talk about ultimate bodhicitta, we are saying everything is emptiness. Everything is just your perception. Nothing exists externally. This information is so important. Remember we talked about the doctor yesterday? The doctor, maybe not here, somewhere else. My mind has become like a jelly, so I don't remember anything. See, a psychiatrist trying to help a crazy person. For this non-bodhisattva psychiatrist, okay, psychiatrist that's not a bodhisattva, or maybe a small-time bodhisattva, but not a bodhisattva who understands the ultimate truth. This psychiatrist, way he or she works with this crazy person is like this. As a psychiatrist, you develop a goal, saying, okay, this man is crazy, this man is abnormal, I have to make him normal. So I'm just giving a very general example. And you develop a notion called normality through what? Through the books, through the educations, you know, coming from Mr. Freud. Mr. Freud has caused more problem than help sometimes. Mr. Freud has designed a so-called normalcy, normality. Every psychiatrist believes that that's normality, okay? And then the psychiatrist is helping and trying so hard to make this abnormal person, so-called abnormal person, to reach to this normality. When in fact, this person should be normal, but normal in here, and different kinds of normality. But the psychiatrist doesn't accept this kind of normality because it's never written in the book. This wasn't part of your degree in your university. And this was, after all, not taught by Mr. Freud or Jung. You understand? So you end up making a normal person abnormal most of the time. And do you know why? Because most of these people think so-called normalcy does exist truly. So-called disease does exist truly. Whereas a bodhisattva who understands the ultimate truth, for him or her, so-called normality and abnormality are all interdependent. There is no such thing as truly existing normality, truly existing abnormality. The only thing that is real peace is going beyond normality and abnormality, which is the enlightenment. Yeah? So that's the sort of a really general example of ultimate bodhicitta. And this ultimate bodhicitta must accompany with everything, yeah? Even like lighting a lamp, yeah, candle. Okay, let's say you're opening a shoe shop somewhere in, I don't know, Lucky Plaza, is it? Yeah. And you go to one of these fortune tellers or a lama, actually. And he tells you, you should light some candle lamps, you know, candles. So, candle, you know, we see lots of candles. When you don't have the ultimate bodhicitta, what does that mean? No ultimate bodhicitta means that you really think that the shoe shop exists. Therefore, success of the shoe shop exists. Failure of the shoe shop exists. Therefore, you hope for the truly existing success of a shoe shop. And you fear for the truly existing failure of the shoe shop. Yeah? So, you now offer a truly existing candle. And because you are so much clinging to this truly existing candle, if it doesn't burn properly, you worry. It creates some superstition. Oh, it's not burning well. Is this a bad sign? And then you do another more. You go to another fortune teller and ask, my candle didn't burn properly. Does that mean something? Should I do another round of rituals? Like that. It goes on and on. Because the base, the non-existence of all this is not understood. Now this is difficult. Of course, this is really, really, that's the understanding of emptiness. That's a really, really difficult to come. But anyway, briefly, ultimate bodhicitta is understanding the nature of everything, which is emptiness. Okay? So, what do we do? To do that, to really realize the emptiness, first, Shantideva said, Nyamon, Shine Rabdu Dembe, Thangtongi, Nyamon, Nambar Jambar Shejane, Thongmar Shine Tsalja. Only with insight wisdom, only with the wisdom can penetrate the cause of impure perception, which is ego. Yeah? Cause of the impure perception is our ego, our emotions. You can only penetrate them with the wisdom of understanding that things does not exist truly. But this kind of insight wisdom can only happen when you have a really good shamatha as a ground, as a foundation. So Shantideva said, one must first apply shamatha method before the vipassana. And even this shamatha can only come when you have a proper renunciation and revulsion towards the samsara. Renunciation mind. I think we talked a little bit about renunciation mind earlier. Remember, we were talking about this tie. What should a Vajrayana practitioner, how should a Vajrayana practitioner understand renunciation? Just like a tie. It's ridiculous, but you wear it still. You keep on thinking it's ridiculous. That's really the best form of renunciation. Don't deprive yourself with a tie. Because if you do that, then it's a bit like a sort of Sharvakayana kind of renunciation. Basically, you have to realize all this so-called worldly pleasure, worldly success, worldly gain has no essence. And if you look at it carefully, it is true. They have no end, there is no essence. We have done so much and we have acquired so much, we have managed to achieve so much, but never enough. We still want more and we think it's necessary. And many times it is not. Remember, like shopping, maybe the 12 jeans is enough, but you shop as if you are going to live for 1,000 years. Remember that bit we talked yesterday? Because our mind is, you know, why the renunciation is difficult? Of course, a big part is attachment and attraction towards this beautiful, you know, like Armani, what else? Giordano, cheap, durable, all this. But partly because of insecurity of not thinking one don't have enough. Not really, you know. I always think in the West, during the 60s, during the Beatles' time, it has changed now. It's become so, you know, the whole hippie culture actually initiated with a kind of a renunciation, but they, you know, somehow they got distracted. I wish they revive the real hippie culture. I was reading this a little bit, and I'm really interested with this. During the 60s, you know, there was all this hippie movement, bohemian movement, sort of hippie lifestyle. And it actually came up from a very interesting thought, because what they think was this society's structure, a structure that is given and designed by a great man up there, president, prime minister, you know, parliament, is just created by someone else. And why should we follow this? Why should we become a slave of a consumer society? Why should, when the Giorgio Armani said, this is the best jeans, why should we give in to it? You know, when McDonald's says, this is the best food, when the Coca-Cola company says, what, real thing, something like that? Why should we give in to that? Why don't we plant our own tomatoes? Why don't we plant our own vegetable gardens? Why don't we knit our own clothes? Why don't we be self-sufficient? It actually, the hippie movement in the 60s actually was quite an enlightening one, I always thought. You can even hear from some of these songs with, you know, the Beatles and all that. But it has then again got corrupted, you know, like all the other spiritual path, you know. The hippie movement has now everybody is like hippie outside but yuppie inside. So there's really no point. What we should be doing, you know, the Vajrayana practitioner, what is the essence of Vajrayana practitioner? Hippie inside, yuppie outside. Not the other way around. Nowadays, most of these hippies, they have a big account, credit cards, all of that. They just wear ragged clothes when they go to Kathmandu. That's about it. But there's no letting go. There's no sense of not being a slave of a consumer society. And most of us, especially Asians, we are in a way very much obedient society. We have been so obedient with Mr. Confucius. What was it? Kongzi, is it? Kongzi? Yeah. So sad. I cannot understand why the ancient Chinese didn't surrender to someone like Lao Tzu. I think his wisdom is, for me, much more dynamic, free thinking. But then again, I can understand because, like Buddhism can never be misused by political leader. Do you know why? No political leader can come up and say, hey, you guys, better behave, otherwise emptiness will punish you. Like Christians and Muslims or whatever, all this, Confucius, you know, again, oh, you better behave, otherwise the ancestors will look upon you, or, you know, the God will punish you and all that. Basically, we have built a certain structure or a society that CCL is just impossible. CCL is just impossible. The very teacher who teaches you how to be CCL, they also create another pattern so that you fall into a certain trap, so that you become not CCL. You become completely contrived, completely hypocrite, all because of lack of understanding of the ultimate bodhicitta. Anyway, renunciation mind is what we apply, and then do the shamatha meditation. Of course, there's many different ways. In the Sakyapa tradition, initially we use a flower, a blue flower, but that doesn't really matter. But anyway, if you want to pursue the path of a path and fruit teaching of Sakyapa Lamde, then maybe the blue flower is really good, because blue color not only represents the emptiness, but it represents the color of the Hei Vajra's body. So you already get used to this kind of symbol. You already get connected to this kind of deity. All of that, please get your personal instructions from your personal guru. It's not my job, and this job shouldn't be given to me also. Anyway, with lots of reasons, I am just not a responsible person. I'm very selfish. Really, try to think this. Don't look for a teacher like me. Do you know why? No, really, try not to be my student, because the problem is I love myself too much. I don't care about your enlightenment. So since I love myself so much, if you come and if you make mistake, you remember earlier example I gave you, I will say, okay, don't worry, you know. So I will have more and more population, members of my disciple. You understand? I will not go and say, you don't do this, don't do that, because I'm so scared I will lose you. Feeling of rejection is terrible. Being rejected by your student, wow, that's painful. You understand? So if you want the enlightenment, I'm not the right person to be teaching you. Really, seriously, from the bottom of my heart, I'm confessing this. I'm not joking or anything like that. If you become my student, I will tell you what you want to hear. Hardly I will tell you what you need to hear. That's one side of me. The second side of me is I am just impossible to handle. I tell you, impossible. Really, really, the most obnoxious, most spoiled, most selfish, most hard to find anyway, you know. So just, there are so many, many great enlightened beings, and especially the members of the Sakit Center here. You are so blessed by the presence of the great Vajradhara himself, His Holiness. He is, I mean, it is amazing to think. Sometimes I sometimes think, it's just amazing that His Holiness, Sakit Chusen, actually in flesh walked on this earth. I mean, maybe in this age, because we are such a jaded person, like a Parisian who still haven't gone to Eiffel Tower, because the Eiffel Tower is right there, and we think, oh well, I'll go tomorrow. So they end up not going for generations. So sometimes His Holiness is so kind of available. You know, you can just call him Rajpur, you know, you can just email him, and when he comes here, you can just talk to him. So we get so jaded and we don't appreciate. I really think in about, I don't know, in many years, if you think back, you will realize it is just amazing that someone like His Holiness Sakit Chusen has actually walked on this earth, walked on this room, sat on this throne, talked. Actually, we have heard a voice, His voice, so much blessing. When there is no more of these great masters, then you have no choice but to settle with jackals like us. You understand? Then you have no choice. But right now, you have so much choice, and you have a good choice, so much merit. You have to appreciate your own merit, having met the great masters like His Holiness. One of the really sort of encouraging, incredibly encouraging source of happiness is both air, both Dungse Rinpoche's, they are really rising as a great master. And then the young Luding Khen Rinpoche, I've seen him recently in Taiwan, and I was so touched. Because I know him from very young. You know, he's kind of, you know, age-wise, he's sort of like a junior to me, but he has really, I don't know, worldly speaking, matured, but not only matured, he's more than matured. He's very special. He's not only a combination of two great family, the Kwon family, and the Dakshin Sherpa family, where the Luding or the Luding lineage actually arise from. But I think masters like Luding Khenpo, the young Luding Khenpo, is really a great hope for us. And they, not only that, they are someone whom you can handle, whom you can be with, and you can find them also, because they're not a difficult and spoiled and just impossible person like some of you know, right? Like, you know, so you should think like that and get as many teachings as possible from them. Anyway, where on what track were we at? I completely lost my track now.
What was it? Where was it? Ultimate
Bodhicitta. Okay, yeah. So the shamatha. So first we develop the shamatha, okay? Whatever way, some of you, those who are practicing the lamde, use the blue flower or whatever. Some of those who are Theravadan or a Sharvakayana path holder, breathing in and out, it doesn't matter, really. Basically, like a zazen, the Zen tradition, you just sit. Sit and sit and sit. And you concentrate on an object, that's all you do. It's an incredible method. Do you know why? Remember, all this time we have been talking about impure perception? Do you know why you have this endless chain-like impure perception. Remember we talked yesterday? You think about a beach. This beach relates to the California. California beach relates to Hollywood. Hollywood relates to Jennifer Lopez. Jennifer Lopez relates to something else, I don't know. It goes on and on and on. Impure perception like a chain, endlessly, so strong, so solid, comes in our being just endlessly. Do you know why? Because you give them the chance to happen this way. You give them. Remember I was telling you, you sit in the living room for 2 minutes. You get bored, you search for remote control. Switch on the television. More impure perception. Of course, that's real impure perception, isn't it? And then one impure perception is not enough. There's about 50 channels of impure perceptions. That's not enough. You have to throw a party. And then remember all the way to the kinky stuff. All kinds of things we have, impure perception. And this is because we need to have impure perception, almost. It's like we are addicted. We are addicted to impure perception. Even for 1 minute, we cannot sit still without some kind of injection of kind of entertainment. Songs or dance or a music or a television or a novel to read. And lastly, Dharma also. Dharma is also a bit of an entertainment because it sort of makes you feel that you have practice at least. You know, it's like, how do you feel when you finish doing your sadhana? Huh? It's such a big relief. Isn't it? This is why I do in the morning. If you do the sadhana in the evening, my God, the whole day you have to worry. So doing the sadhana is like, you do it and get done with it. And if you don't do it, it's like that. We need constant injection of entertainment. And that's why they are coming and getting you more and more, and you get more and more obsessed. So, during the shamatha, what do? You completely let go of them, and all you are thinking about is some stupid blue flower. All the others, when they come, you just go back to the flower. By doing so, this chain of thoughts, this chain of impure perceptions are becoming, you know, like as you are thinking about, okay, all these thoughts comes normally, but this time, all you think about is the blue flower or the breathing. Then, suddenly, the impure perceptions, they are shocked. They don't know what to do with you. Because normally you are waiting there hungry, opening your arms and mouth and, you know, like not enough. But this time suddenly you are not paying attention to them. That's it. Shamatha meditation is basically an art of ignoring entertainment, an art to ignore the impure perception. As you only concentrate on the breathing or a blue flower, all the rest, impure perception, they don't know what to do. So for first few months, they will really bother you with their bells and sound. Hey, you know, pay attention to us. You know, like a spoiled brat. They like you to, you know, pay attention to them. Don't care. All you look at is this blue flower. And then impure perceptions slowly give in. Then you know what to do with them. If you want 2 impure perceptions, you can have 2. One of them, if you want to dismiss by 3 o'clock, you dismiss. So impure perception is under your control. And that's what we call experiential perception. You understand? Now that's just a very brief introduction to the shamatha. We have no time. Now the vipassana. After developing a good foundation of shamatha, you then do the vipassana. There is many, many ways of doing the vipassana. Basically, vipassana is a wisdom that understands egolessness. That you can do as normally what the Charvakayana and the Mahayana does. Analytical meditation, kusulis, you know, concentration meditation. But those who are practicing, for instance, lamde, like lamdu, you know, the hay vajra practice. Hay vajra practice is actually not other than the vipassana meditation. I mean, actually our whole sadhana consists of both shamatha and vipassana. For instance, if you are concentrated, you know, okay, let's start with the refuge. You visualize the refuge object in front of you. Guru in the form of hay vajra, all of that. Even that has a little bit of a shamatha and vipassana by visualizing the guru as a hay vajra. That has a both a shamatha and vipassana. You know why? Okay, you visualize the guru in front of you and as a form of a hay vajra, and concentrating on that has the shamatha effect. Right? That's the shamatha. And you don't normally, when you visualize the guru, you don't visualize the guru as how you see, you know, like Hisaranyaka Trisin, for instance. But you transform him into hay vajra. Hisaranyaka Trisin has only two arms, right? Right. But we transform him into 16 arms, blue color, with a vajra naratmaya, wrathful, fangs and all of that. What does this do? This cuts the impure perception of His Holiness Sakyatrizin, a Tibetan, two arms, one who lives in Rajput, one who goes to toilet sometimes, one who eats, one who does walk when he needs to come downstairs, but one who doesn't fly down to the, you know, throne. All these are our impure perception. And this impure perception comes from the ego. So that needs to be cut out. So that's why we transform him as, because after all, it's your idea. Right now, we have enough merit to see His Holiness as, you know, the kind Tibetan Lama who is so humble, so gentle. That's the only merit we have. If we accumulate our merit more and more, maybe in few years, bluish color, 16 arms, all of that. And then we accumulate more merit, more and more merit. One day you realize that guru is not other than your own mind. Then that's it. That's the end of the Buddhism, end of the Vajrayana. No more going to the teachings. At last, no more sadhanas, reading, you understand? No more of those. So, even in the sadhana, like just visualizing the object of refuge, it has both a vipassana and a samatha. And then you take refuge. At the end of the refuge, what happens? Object of refuge dissolves into you. See? Refugee, yourself, and the object of refuge become inseparable. That's a vipassana. That's a non-duality. That is a complete different from ego. That's a vipassana. So, likewise, all the path is designed to disorganize chaos, right? Chaos. Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche has such a good term. He calls it orderly chaos. Mandala. The whole concept of mandala is basically a chaos. You are creating a chaos. When you are practicing the sadhana, all you are doing is creating chaos. Because your impure perception is so organized. They really organized. Schedule-wise, what do you call it? They are so, notes, calendar, task, reminder, alarm clock, schedules, you know, everything is so organized, all this impure perception. The moment the sadhana is applied, impure perception, organized impure perception is now become chaotic. And that's the mandala, you see. So anyway, this is a brief introduction to experiential perception, the second perception. Now the third, we have enough time. Yeah. But anyway, third is very short. As I told you, cannot talk this one. This is a pure perception. You see, pure perception is beyond us. It's, as I said, how would an enlightened being see, or how would enlightened being have what kind of perception? If an enlightened being reaches here today, will he see things like this? Will he still go to hawker center and have to go through the burden of choosing, going round, and which one is good and which one is not good? Enlightened being, what does that mean? Enlightened being means someone who has no ego, no pride, no jealousy, no attachment, none of these emotions. So we can only guess. We can only do the guess job. Okay, see, when someone who loves durian, is it durian? Looks at the durian, even the shape of the durian is beautiful. That's why some of them even went so far to design a house that looks like... Yeah. But for some of us, those who hate durian can't stand it, right? So dualistic perception. Now I wonder, someone who has no dualistic mind is offered a durian, what kind of perception will he have, will she have? Or is he or she? No, he is beyond he and she. This is why always in the sadhana also, like if you are reading the sadhana, Vajra Naratmaya, the concept of the Hey Vajra, is not other than him, right? We are not talking about transvestites though, okay? Transsexuals. We are not talking about a transsexual, by the way. We are talking about beyond male and female, beyond dualistic. So this is what I mean. Yesterday, like, if you are asking me whether I want to achieve enlightenment, seriously, I don't think so. You know why? Because most of us, when we say enlightenment, we want to achieve enlightenment, all we want is a slightly better life than what we have. No need to work, maybe 6 days of holidays, but one day working. Maybe not need, even that we can take leave. No red lights in the traffic. I don't know. Sofa seats that can be turned into a bathtub within one press of button. All kinds of things. This is what we are imagining, isn't it? Really, this is how it is. You know, I will tell you. You know, we read sutras, and then in our mind we compose a suffering, a samsara, intellectual samsara. And then we read sutras, and we compose an intellectual nirvana. Okay? Now, there's a real samsara, and there is a real nirvana. So we Buddhists, we are trying to abandon the intellectual samsara and trying to achieve the intellectual nirvana. And we are not even one inch we are going to give up the real samsara. And we don't even think about the real nirvana. Because real nirvana is beyond our emotion, really. I always say, you know, like, for one thing, if I'm enlightened, I will never be able to enjoy a football match. Because since an enlightened being, I know everything instantly, what has happened in the past, present, and the future, instantly. So the whole point of a football match is, who is going to score first? Who is going to win? That's our so-called fun, isn't it? The fun. 99.99.99% of our fun is gone during the Enlightenment. Because so-called fun in our life is usually a product of our insecurity, like a detective film. You watch a detective film, you enjoy it just because you don't know what's happening, until the end. And the relationship is like that. We have a relationship, you know, the whole relationship, boyfriend, girlfriend, boyfriend, boyfriend, girlfriend, girlfriend, relationship. I'm trying to be politically correct, by the way. All this relationship, do you know relationship works? Do you know how the relationship works? Because there is an insecurity. As long as there is an insecurity, relationship works. So, if you ever find someone who is a little insecure about their boyfriend or girlfriend, tell them, ah, it's working. Now you have a relationship. Really. If one of them have no insecurity, relationship won't work. Let's say you have a girlfriend who doesn't care what you do, right? You can go around with, like, you can even sleep with an elephant. She doesn't care. She doesn't care. And suddenly, what do you think? You think, you feel very bad because you think she doesn't love you, right? This is how human mind is. She's giving you a freedom, but you think she doesn't care. We want her to be jealous. We want her to be possessive, but not too much. A little bit. Little bit. Only a little bit. If too much, suffocating. So, everything that so-called fun is actually based on insecurity. Like drinking coffee, like smoking cigarette, like a thrill, you know. And don't think that you are exception. Really, you are not an exception. If you are not an enlightened being, none of us are an exception. Since I'm such a, you know, film, movie buff, you know, I watch a lot of films, and one film that really haunted me, actually it really created some depression. Really, I'm serious. It really depressed me for months. Even now, when I think of it, sometimes it takes me to some kind of depression. I couldn't eat for days. I couldn't think of things. And that's one movie is Deer Hunter. I don't know whether you have seen this film called Deer Hunter. Robert De Niro is acting in there. And that film really stunned me for years. And there's a scene where they play Russian roulette. Remember? Russian roulette. They have one bullet in their pistol and they shoot. It's betting, basically. And then you bet that you will not get killed. And then you count, and then you shoot yourself. One of them, you know, there's two people when you play this game, and whoever gets shot is lost. It's such a bad, you know, daring game during the Vietnam War. And there's an American soldier, he was forced to play this game by the Viet Cong. And he has been so lucky, every time he shoot, empty, right, blank. So he always win. Years later, you know, when the war is ended, he is still in Vietnam doing this out of his will. Why? Because he's so attached to this thrill of not being shot. And the reason why it made me depressed is I was thinking, I have the complete tendency like him. I can do this. I can see myself doing the Russian roulette and getting addicted to this. Really, it's amazing. It really scared. I was so scared that I have the whole tendency for liking such a game, for loving or getting addicted to such a game. Thrill, the thrilling, it's such a thrill. So this kind of things can happen. Anyway, I'm not supposed to talk about this kind of depressing things. I'm supposed to talk about the pure perception. Pure perception is basically a perception that is perceived without any dualistic mind. So all we could do is guess. At the moment, we can say, we have a name, beautiful name. It's called Kudang Yeshe, Janas and Kayas, bodies, dimensions and the wisdom. So how they look like, we don't know. And I am the last person you should be asking. Well, we have managed to kill our time. So That's about all. Please, those who are interested in the practice, keep practicing. Life is long and short both ways. And spiritual practice is very easy. It's a matter of thinking. It's not a matter of chanting. Try to incorporate your spiritual thinking in our day-to-day life. Really. Drink a cup of cappuccino as it travels from your mouth and through the throat and as it lands here. Think that that actually is worthy of a celebration because it could have not happened. Moment by moment, we can appreciate our life. If you look at a beautiful flower, suddenly a beautiful butterfly flying, you see. Amazing. Appreciate that. Dwell in that moment. And that's how you incorporate your life and the spiritual life. Dwell in the present, not to the past. No use. Gone. Don't dwell too much on the future. No use. It's not under your control. Basically, the only thing that you can control is this, whatever you have, this moment. Past, you can't control. Future, you can't control. What you can control is what you have right now, this minute. And how do you control? Not with chanting mantras, not with binding them with your rosary, but by just looking at it and appreciating it. That's it. And happy to see you, and I hope to see you again soon.